Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Night.
Radio Sai Thursday Night.
Stay tuned.
Dear listener, Radio Sai now brings you a special amazing talk by Professor J. Venkatraman. This talk was first featured live on Thursday Live broadcast on 4th September 2014, and we now bring you the rebroadcast version of that talk. Over now to Professor J. Venkatraman.
Sairam, and greetings from Prashanthi Nilayam. As was announced a little earlier, this is Venkatraman speaking to you after a long time. Once upon a time I was a regular, but now I am not even an occasional broadcaster. So what brings me to the mic today? That is what I will mention right now. Yesterday was the 3rd of September. I refer to it for a very, very important reason, which is that it marked the 75th anniversary of the commencement of the Second World War. The media, which went gaga on June 5th or 6th, I don't remember the exact date, that is to say D-Day, with special ceremonies and all that, remained curiously silent yesterday. By the way, for those of you who are not aware, D-Day is the day when the Allied troops made a landing in France on the Normandy beach to attack Hitler's forces from the west. Till that time, Hitler held sway of entire Western Europe, but now the Allies landed in strength, and one by one they recaptured the countries of Western Europe from Hitler. That is during Second World War. Contrary to all those celebrations, yesterday there was no mention of the beginning of Second World War, at least to the extent I followed the media. Instead, I heard the rumblings of a possible nuclear war. And this is a sequel to the problems that Ukraine is facing during the last few months. Going back to World War II, it lasted about 6 years and was fought all over Europe and a good part of Asia and even in Northern Africa. In fact, as far as the East is concerned, the Japanese came almost up to Assam in India. 50 million people died in the war, Second World War. That includes not only soldiers but also civilians. And for the first time in human history, the number of civilians who died far exceeded the number of soldiers who were killed in the war. And that was all the result of technology. Just to give you a feel for numbers, in the Battle of Stalingrad, 1 million Soviet soldiers died. And along with 1 million citizens, they fought to save this Stalingrad, now renamed as Volgograd, from the clutches of the Germans. And yet, in this war, where 50 million people died, I repeat, 50 millions. We would call it 5 crores here in this country. So many died. And no one seemed to take a few minutes off yesterday to examine the futility of war. That is my complaint. Throughout history, there have been any number of wars, and millions have died. Has anything really positive come out of any of these wars? I don't find any discussion of this matter. In fact, most people say war is a loss for both sides, including the so-called victors. Let's go back to World War II. Swami used to say, there cannot be an effect without a cause. So, what was the cause for World War II? You'd be surprised to learn that the seeds of World War II were sown on the day World War I ended. Can you believe that? but that's true. Not only that, so were the seeds for all the problems now seen in West Asia, in Palestine, Syria, Iraq, Lebanon, and so forth. I'm not going to go into all that history, but I do have to say for a few words about how World War II started. As I just told you, it all started right when World War I ended, which was in 1918. In fact, the armistice came into effect on the 11th of November 1918 at 11 a.m. Paris time. When I was young and British were ruling, 11th November was observed as Armistice Day, and at 11 o'clock in the morning, all work would stop and the siren would blow. Of course, that stopped after independence. Now this war, World War I, was fought between an alliance made up of UK, France, the Russian Empire, Tsar of Russia was ruled over Russia at that time, United States, Italy and Japan on one hand, and Germany, the Austro-Hungarian Empire, and the Ottoman Empire on the other. After the war ended with victory for the Allies, Germany was found itself in the dumps. There were huge economic problems. And the reason for that economic problem was that the peace treaty that was signed after World War I, namely the Versailles Treaty, was quite one-sided. It punished Germany very severely. And Germany had to pay back as reparations something like $132 billion, dollars of those days. Today apparently it comes to about $330 billion. That's a lot of money for a country like Germany to pay back. And it was a very poor, impoverished Germany. Millions of young people had been killed. There was no money to run the factories. And so on. Germany was devastated. Food was in short supply. And this reparations, as it was called, literally crushed Germany. The Allies wanted to make sure that Germany would never rise again. And over and above this, they took pieces of Germany and merged it in other countries, and I shall come to that a little later. The economic sanctions and punishment imposed on Germany became so severe. At one time, to buy a loaf of bread, one had to take $1 trillion. And it used to be said that you had to take a wheelbarrow full of dollars, not dollars, marks, German marks, to buy a loaf of bread. That was the sort of chaos and inflation that Germany went through. Meanwhile, in 1917, even before the war ended, the Russian Empire collapsed, there was a revolution, and the Communist Party took over the entire country. Monarchy ended in Russia, and the Communists were in power. The German people saw this, and felt after the war, that what their country needed was probably communism. So there was a strong communist movement in the post-war Germany, that is after World War I. But many others did not like communism one bit because of various reasons, including market reasons. So there were another party which was formed, which was a Nazi party, and there was a tug of war between the Nazis and the communists in post-war Germany. Meanwhile, the government itself became very powerless. It was called the Weimar Republic. It was a democratic government made up of upper-class people. It could not govern. There was political chaos, weak government, unbearable inflation, and two strongly opposed parties fighting to capture power. And then came Hitler as if from nowhere. He was a Nazi. He was a powerful orator, and he skillfully captured the seat of power. And once he did that, the very first thing he did was to tear up the Treaty of Versailles. I told you about a peace treaty that is called Treaty of Versailles because that is the place where it was signed. In Paris. And Hitler took charge of the country and began running it. He sided with the industrialists and started building war machine. Because he could flout, he decided, I don't care for the Treaty of Versailles, it's not even a piece of paper, I'm going to do what I like. That was bad for the future, but for Germans it looked like a good thing because it brought back jobs. They had no jobs, huge unemployment. Hitler got rid of unemployment. This happened somewhere between 1933 and 1939. Germany became stronger and stronger, and Hitler started taking back pieces of Germany which had been taken away by the Treaty of Versailles. The first target was parts of Czechoslovakia. Today those countries are separate. There is the Czech Republic and Slovakia. They are two, it's like, you know, the state of Andhra becoming two parts. Here one country becoming two countries. British India becoming India and Pakistan. And the reason why Hitler took away parts of Czechoslovakia is there were portions where the Germans formed a very high percentage of the population. He complained that the Germans there were being discriminated. He one day just walked in and took it all over, called it Sudetenland. This occupation occurred around in September, I believe, 1938. UK was shocked. Shocked because, contrary to the Treaty of Versailles, Hitler had actually taken over part of another country. So the Prime Minister of UK, Neville Chamberlain, went to Munich in Germany to have talks with Hitler. Hitler said, that part of the world was ours. It was taken away from us. We are taking it back. But Neville Chamberlain said, all right, please stop that. Don't take over any more countries because that can lead to conflict. We agree to your taking over Sudetenland. Everybody said, Neville Chamberlain is a weak man. He does not know how to stand up to Hitler. He came back to London and said, no, Hitler has given a promise, he won't attack anybody. Hitler, of course, had other plans. Meanwhile, there was tension between USSR and Germany for a number of reasons into which I will not go. And Hitler was not ready for a war with Russia, nor was Stalin, the head of USSR, ready for a war with Germany. So, for their own particular reasons, Hitler and Stalin signed a pact, Russo-German pact. And they said, we will not have war between us. If you do something, we stay away. And if we do something, you stay away. And this is exactly what Hitler wanted. Why? Because after World War I, Germany was split into two with a corridor in between. There was what we may call West Germany and East Prussia. And with a piece of, like a neck, sticking out from another country, which is Poland. Poland got it back because it used to be part of Poland at one time. And so, if Hitler wanted to go to East Prussia, he had to go through Poland. And he said, this is nonsense. This used to be Germany. And I'm going to unify Germany completely. If you go back to the history of India after partition, we had two Pakistans, East Pakistan and West Pakistan. They were separated by something like 2,000 odd kilometers. Here was East Germany and West Germany, or East Prussia as it was called. They were separated by 200 kilometers of Poland. So one fine day, which happened to be the 1st September 1939, Hitler marched into Poland and simply occupied it. There was a pact between Poland and United Kingdom. United Kingdom gave an ultimatum. In fact, just 2 days ago or 3 days ago, I heard that ultimatum being read out on BBC by the Prime Minister or somebody, I don't remember. It was part of some other program, BBC Archives. And there the person says, we give an ultimatum to Germany to withdraw from Poland, and that ultimatum expires at 12 o'clock on such and 3rd September. If that is not followed, we will be in a state of war with Germany. In other words, on 3rd September 1939, England declared war against Germany, and that kick-started World War II. On that very day, India was said to be at war with Germany, and that rattled Indian politics, which I will not go into. The moment war started, and France and England said, "We are against you and we are going to fight you," Hitler said, "No problem." And having captured Poland in 5 minutes, his troops rolled over, and by middle of 1940, France had fallen, Belgium had fallen, Denmark remained neutral, Hitler did not go there, Holland had fallen, and whole of Western Europe was under Hitler's control. The British troops that had landed there were all driven out. They were evacuated from a port called Dunkirk, and there was not a single British soldier in Western Europe after Dunkirk. And France had become what you call a subjugated nation. It was ruled by Germany. And just to give you a fix, I'm talking about 1940, May-June period, when Western Europe was completely under Hitler. Here in Uruvakunda, on 20th October 1940, Swami declared who he was. 14-year-old boy who said, "I am going to serve humanity." It made very little sense. A 14-year-old boy saying, "I am leaving home and hearth in order to serve humanity," when Hitler had overrun whole of Western Europe, and he was bombing London daily. London was being really, and they could not reply to the bombing. They did not have the air power, whereas Germany had prepared for 10 years, and people used to seek shelter in the underground. Underground means the tube railway. Some parts of it is as deep as 150 feet under rock. There, they built a office for war cabinet. Churchill even had a bed there, he could sleep there. 150 feet of rock. In those days, bombs were not that power. I had a program about it a few days ago in BBC. At that time, Swami dared to say, "I am going to save the world, and that is why I have come." What about America? America stayed out, but it gave massive material help to the Allied forces. However, the story changed on 7 December 1941. In Japan, which earlier fought on the side of Allies, now turned against the Allies and attacked Pearl Harbor on 7 December 1941. At this stage, U.S. declared war against Japan, also Germany. Now it became an officially involved in the war against Germany and began to send not only equipment but its own troops. Thus, on D-Day, when the Allied forces landed, a lot of the troops were from the United States. And a counterattack was actually headed by General Dwight Eisenhower, who was the Supreme Allied Commander. In fact, he was above Lord Montgomery, who was the commander of the British forces. Let me now continue and look at the East side. By the time he had conquered all the whole of Western Europe, and before D-Day, Hitler said, "Now I can take on Stalin because the whole of Western Europe is under my command, under control." And all of a sudden, without any notice, he attacked Russia. Russians began to lose very heavily. Of course, on his way to Russia, he made sure Hungary, Poland, everything was under his control. And when he knocked on the doors of Russia, he seemed unstoppable. Russians fought very hard, and they also got help from America. And then came the Russian winter. Nobody can take on Russian winter. Napoleon had tried it earlier, and he failed miserably. This time, Russian winter won again. Hitler, with all his modern technology, could not stand the winter. He began to retreat. Now the Russians began to chase him. And then what happened was, Hitler was caught between two enemies. The one from the west, closing in on him, and the one from the east. Russians entered Berlin on May 1st. I still remember running to buy the newspaper in the morning at 8 o'clock in Karachi, said, Russians have entered Berlin. That was the headline. And within a week, the Americans came, and by end of first week of May, the war against Germany had ended. War was over. And a little after that, the war against Japan also ended once they dropped two bombs, atom bombs, that is. So what was the loss in terms of human life? About 15 million people had perished, but hardly any lessons were learnt from that huge destruction of human life. By the way, the number of Indians killed was 2 million. 2 million Indian soldiers died in both East and West. It's quite a large number. If World War II ended, it also marked the birth of the new nuclear weapons era. For the first time in human history, nuclear weapons had been dropped in a war. That was 1945. Where was Swami in 1945? In 1940, he had made the declaration. Swami was now in the Apaka Mandiram. Now, it's interesting, the moment World War II ended, the so-called Cold War started between US and USSR. It seems as if nothing had been learned. This was the result of a fundamental ideological view that existed as early as 1930s, which now blew up into a massive armament, nuclear armament program both by America and the Soviet Union. In 1947, while the Cold War was hotting up on both sides, and both sides began to stockpile atom bombs and the fearsome hydrogen bomb, in 1947, 2 years after the end of Second World War, Swami, then in Pathamandiram, writes a letter to Seshmaraju, his elder brother, declaring clearly what his mission is. He says, I am going to do this, I have come for this, this. Still nobody believed. They loved Swami. They really gathered around him to experience his love. But few people understood the magnitude of his mission and the profundity of his promise. Even before war ended, in 1944, the United Nations was formed, and the charter begins with the very impressive words, we, the peoples of the United Nations, determined to save succeeding generations from the scourge of war, which twice in our lifetime has brought untold sorrow to mankind, and etc., etc. Great words, but has the United Nations lived up to its promise? In fact, not. In June of 1950, the Korean War broke out. And after that, there have been many wars, Vietnam War, this war, that war, and so on. Since I talked about the Korean War in 1950, let us also look at what happened in 1950. Swami moved to what was then called the New Mandir, that he did on 23rd November 1950, which was supposed to be his 25th birthday, if I'm not mistaken. And he named the new mandir Prashanti Nilayam. Prashanti Nilayam, that's very significant. And I'll have something to say about very shortly. I told you earlier that the number of people who were killed in Second World War was about 50 million. Do you realize that without any World War, the number of people who have died after World War II till today is close to 50 million. You wonder how this is possible. Well, there have been many wars and also many genocides. So, and there is non-stop conflict all the time and little numbers add up. Meanwhile, as far as nuclear weapons are concerned, the stockpiling was what you call mind-boggling, not just frightening. In the late 70s, when Jimmy Carter was president of America, the United States had 31,000 nuclear weapons, while the USSR had 37,000 nuclear weapons. And each of these weapons was several times more powerful than the bombs dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, sometimes as much as 50 times. Imagine bombs 50 times more powerful than Hiroshima. And they could be delivered with missiles. That means any place on earth could be reached within half an hour to 45 minutes. Time of war is only that much. The process for accidental war was very much there. In fact, during the Carter regime, one day, they had radars everywhere. In the middle of the night, the National Security Advisor to Jimmy Carter was woken up and said, 200 missiles are on their way to attack America. He was frightened. He said, check. They came back and said, it's not 200, it's 2,000. He said, check properly. Because he has to awake the president, and the president alone can give the command to counterattack. There's only 15 minutes left for America to be destroyed. And when they checked, they found one ship had made an error, and it had given a false signal. They checked with other alert centers, radar centers. They said, this is a false signal. This kind of false signals have been there at least four or five times. And apart from that, there have been hydrogen bomb accidents. Luckily, none of them the bomb exploded. And if the bomb had exploded, then the other side, these people, the country where it exploded would have thought the Russians are attacking, they would have counterattacked. So this is an age which is dominated by technology, and as one scholar said, we know how to build complicated systems, but we do not know how to command those systems. The possibility of accidental war looms larger because all these machines have become old. There can be any kind of malfunction, all kinds of problems can arise. I won't talk about it now, but later. So what do we do? I feel we have to do something different. Many years ago, the brilliant physicist, Hungarian physicist, once said, mathematics is too important to be left to mathematicians alone. In the same way, I take the stand, peace is too important to be left to politicians and diplomats and the United Nations. In the year 2012, that is 2 years ago, in the month of September, I was in Australia. They have a day called UN Peace Day, and it so happened I was asked to speak on that day. I was the keynote speaker. And I tried to say that you are not going to get peace in meeting rooms. Peace must come from individuals. This is a sort of new pitch. Basically, I started with Swami's teachings and said, look, Swami talks of two words, Shanti and Prashanti. Both mean peace, but what is the difference? I said, Shanti means inner peace. When you have inner peace, there will be calmness in your face. There will be a radiance, glow of Shanti. That is just like a flower being beautiful and radiating fragrance. That fragrance is the equivalent of Prashanti. People used to go to Ramana to have his darshan. Ramana would not speak. He would be silent. But in that silence was peace. And when you saw him, you began to feel peace too. That is why people go for darshan, to experience peace. The inner peace of the Great One transmits inputs, brings calm to those who go for peace. So, Shanti must become Prashanti. Then only it is meaningful. So this Prashanti is what will radiate from this place. That's why he named it Prashanti Nilay. I mention this because after I spoke, there was a music program. The music program is in two parts, one at the beginning and the other at the end. At the end, both were offered by an Australian lady, Brahma Kumari. And on the spot, she composed a song on peace, Shanti and Prashanti, and ended with Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. I was very happy, and afterwards, you know, I mingled with the crowd, and a lot of people said, can I have a picture with you and all that. I said, why not? Then two people came and said, can we have a picture with you? He said, why not? They looked Indian, and I asked them, where are you from? And they said, we are from Lahore. I was taken aback, and one of them is an imam. So I looked up and said to Swami, Swami, this is amazing. Here I am in Australia, in a Christian church. I am from India, they are from Pakistan. They are supposed to be enemies in terms of religion and politics. But here we are shaking hands. And this today is supposed to be UN Peace Day. Only by your, Maya Leela's can such things happen. I believe this video is available in the directory. Maybe you can look it up. In short, today there is too much violence. It is there in the movies, it is there in TV programs, video games. Everywhere there is violence. If children are exposed to violence in all forms from an early age, we cannot expect any peace in this world. So we have to tackle this. At least from our end, we have to take more seriously substantive parts of Swami's teachings, which is available in the numerous discourses, which I find is nothing but an amplification and elucidation of the compact teachings given by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. It is only when you read Swami's discourses with some care and attention, you get the deeper meaning. And the only solution to many of these problems is Swami's teachings. Many years ago, Einstein said, no problem can be solved at the level of consciousness at which it is created. Most human-made problems arise in the mind of a person. Hitler's problem arose in the mind. He was angry and he hated people whom he held responsible for the problems of Germany. It was that anger that exploded into World War II and led to the death of 50 million people. So Einstein said, if you want to solve the problems of the mind, you have to go to a level higher than the mind. What is that level? Swami. And we are committed, especially now that Swami has withdrawn his physical form, to give a lot of importance to the teachings of Swami that stress how we discipline ourselves and thereby help the world to become more peaceful. Remember, unless there is Shanti, there cannot be Prashanti, and unless there is Prashanti, there cannot be global peace. It is as simple as that, but it's very, very difficult to become peaceful unless we tame ourselves. So that's going to be our focus, and at least as far as I'm concerned, somehow or the other, every talk I give, I would have to link to Shanti and Prashanti. Swami did not give this name, give the name Prashanti in a name to this place for nothing. That's all I would like to share with you today, as I recall World War II, through which I happened to live, in fact. And I still remember the day when the atom bomb was dropped on Hiroshima. I was in Karachi watching a cricket match. Suddenly, it was about 11 o'clock. That must have been about 8:30 in Japan at that time. A lot of people were talking to each other. I didn't understand what it was. Much later, I understood what had happened. Let that be the last atom bomb that was dropped, that would be ever dropped on humankind. Thank you for listening. God bless and Jai Sai Ram.
Sai Ram, you were listening to a special musings talk by Professor J. Venkatraman, which was first featured live on Thursday live broadcast on 4th September 2014. And what you heard now was a rebroadcast version. Dear listener, your feedback is valuable to us. You may reach us at listener@radiosci.org. Thank you and sign out.